damn, Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., not what I expected.
What were you expecting?
I was really favoring Roy in this, just because, you know, he'd only been out of the ring for maybe two years or something like that, whereas Mike was out for 15. I mean, ring rust is a big factor for fighters. Also, Tyson was older. Roy was obviously usually the lighter man, usually fought in the lower weight divisions. But I just thought he was going to carry a little bit of speed. I didn't expect Roy to ever knock out Tyson. I didn't expect either to really knock out each other. I expected speed for Roy to be a really good factor, with him making a case for winning by points. Roy didn't seem like he seemed to get going. And even in the second round, he looked tired. I think it was those body shots from Mike, because Mike, he was in good shape. Although something was weird. I did point it out. I said, did you look at the bulging bit in his back? In the middle of his traps, he had a big bulge, and it must be from a bulging vertebrae.
His mid-back section.
Bulging disc in his thoracic vertebrae.
Yeah, thoracic spine. Looked like there was an issue with it. It was just really strange. Can't really... no one even pointed... It was like everyone saw it there, but no one really pointed it out. Yeah, like nobody mentioned it. Like, maybe there was a press conference later on that might come down. They might be asking about it, you know? Mm. It's like when, you know, Adesanya had his left titty.
Sagging. Yeah.
Everyone was like, what's up with his titty?
But then they said it afterwards, and they were like, what the fuck happened? Well, Izzy was one of the commentators for the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I never saw him there.
No. I saw on his social media he was wearing like a suit and he'd...
Yeah.
But I had heard that he was making a decent claim about the Reebok deal. Now, while he was commentating, he mentioned that, you know, all these fighters, they're wearing their own, you know, shirts with their own brands and allows for sponsors and things like that. And he made the case that, you know, it's the originality that they have that the UFC currently doesn't have due to the Reebok deal. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think it's that bad that he mentioned it, because the Reebok deal is going to finish up in March, and then Venom's already said they're going to take over, so probably not a bad time to talk about it. Certainly not going to be harsh on his you know, time in the UFC. But he does make a decent point that the Reebok deal makes it a bit weird, whereas all these other fighters like Roy and Mike got to wear their own stuff, and, you know, they got to be a bit more free with how they like express themselves.
Yeah, little bit gives them a little bit more originality, allows them to sort of show the personality a little bit more. I feel like Venom should let them do that in the future. Overall, Venom becomes like the main, you know, overall sponsor of the
They usually do. Yeah. Usually do.
It'll be nice to see. Because some of these fighters, where they come from, you know, they usually hire people to do that sort of stuff for them. So it sort of gives them another role, another job. So there's another business on its own.
Mm.
And then it allows people to sort of build them brand as maybe designers or whatever. So I can't really see why not. Because it's in boxing, some of the big names, you know, they really take advantage of that originality, like Deontay Wilder, you know, he always wears the masks.
Mm.
You know, Mike Tyson, he came out on... Tyson Fury came out on a throne to his last fight. Mm. You don't see much of that sort of stuff in the UFC. Adesanya's
done... The most you saw was probably Izzy.
Yeah.
Izzy doing his dancing and that. I mean, it probably wouldn't be that bad an idea for some people that have dance backgrounds to do that. It just happens that Izzy... That's another feather in his cap to use.
Or just capitalize on the walkout, you know?
Yeah.
Why not? Have a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
Have a little bit of fun.
Mike did very, very well. You know, we were talking afterwards. I think Roy, you could maybe give Roy one round. That's probably the max you could give him. I feel like Tyson, he probably won 7-1, I reckon.
Yeah. Yeah, and they said, well, you told me it was a draw. Well, we saw it one there, it was a draw.
They already said that they were going to announce a winner. They were going to wear 12-ounce gloves. Knockouts are allowed. I think there was an issue with cuts, if cuts were going to happen and things like that. I mean, at the end, Tyson got asked, and so did Roy, at the end of the post-fight interview. It was a joint interview, and he said, you know... the announcer said, are you happy? Are you happy with it being a draw? And Tyson said, yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I am happy because, you know, it was for charity as well. And he gets asked later on, like, would either of you fight again in a non-exhibition match, in a professional match? And Mike goes, no. I didn't do it for this. I did it to be humanitarian. He did it to give money to charity, not for him to have fame and glory. He's already got fame and glory.
Yeah, what was the charity that they were after, though?
I don't know if the charity has been chosen.
Oh.
I think it's a charity boxing match, but they haven't picked what charity they're going to give it to. Okay. Or perhaps they might divide it and give it to many charities. They haven't really spoken about that. That's a good point. It's just, I don't really know which charities they've picked. Mike looked phenomenal. Yeah. I thought physically he looked phenomenal. His back was fucking huge.
Yeah.
His arms were huge.
His chest was huge. Both of those guys had some big arms and chest as well. Mm. They were, for guys who are in their 50s, they really set themselves a milestone. But there were some, they were literally in the first couple of rounds, they moved pretty well for guys in their 50s. Like Mike does that thing where he likes to sidestep into a person's guard or sidestep around a person's guard. And he was doing that. And he was throwing some clean shots to the stomach, like body. It was a real big throwback to his old days, you know. Again, that right hand is still banging. And then he
cracked him a couple times.
Yeah, he threw a few digs to Mike, to Jones, where he was covering up. But not even that, but Jones, like, he was really, like, giving himself a a throwback to back in his old days where he would like to drop his hands and just taunt his opponents and just duck around. And Jones really does have some really good defensive power. So there was one point when I think it was in the sixth round where, Tyson tried to throw this massive left. And Jones just like ducked right out of it and just walked right around him. And then they just started going again. And then everybody in the pub, which we were watching, went woof, including that weird dude in front of us.
Yeah, we had a weird bloke in front of us that would keep on going like, fucking hit him. And he'd start like shadow boxing and shit. And he was so loud, like the whole pub can hear him. And I'm like, stop being a twat. I get that you're excited, but you're being like incredibly obnoxious, like so obnoxious.
He was like, get him, Mike. It's like, even if the slightest punch was thrown, he would just start yelling.
He's just screaming in his head. I was just like, get him, man, get him.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, calm down. I get that you're enjoying the fight. It's brilliant, right? But he starts like throwing punches and shit. And I'm like, just fucking settle down.
Just came down right in front, sat right in front of us, right at the beginning of the last fight. Yeah. He just showed up just for that one fight. And then he's just going hard. And I'm just like, oh.
Mm.
And I remember looking at you, there was a point where you just kept rolling your eyes as well.
Because it kind of just detracts from and distracts you from the fight. You're trying to watch the fight and then there's some bloke just going, get him, get him, get him. Like, and it was like any possible like little touch of a punch. He's going, yeah, fuck him up. And like, it was just a weird bogan bloke.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bunch of bogans sometimes that come to those pubs and kind of, it was a bit distracting because you're trying to watch the fight and then there's this one bloke being a bit of a pisser in front of you. So, I mean, looking back on this fight, they are quite old. We weren't going to expect them to be in their primes or anything like that. But I thought Mike's evasive boxing skills were very much there. I think Roy's speed was there, but his punching and timing was off. We saw that in the seventh and eighth rounds, he started to turn it up, but it was far too late for him to actually start winning rounds then. I felt like the body, the hooks to the body were really digging away at his reserve and his endurance, and I think Mike just did very, very well. Jones just kept on going in the clinch, pulling him tight, and then pushing back out and doing it again and again, whereas Tyson was trying to create space and get in close.
Tyson was taking advantage of the clinch.
Yeah, lots of small digs to the body, short uppercuts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought he did very well. We all know Mike won. We all knew Mike won pretty unanimously, right? But I don't mind that it was given a draw and that there was no decisive winner because it was supposed to be an exhibition bout anyway. Yeah. And it was supposed to be just for charity. He said afterwards that he wants to fight again. And he said Roy will be on, you know, on that card as well. So it was interesting that Mike was very keen to keep boxing, whereas Roy when asked if he was going to continue boxing, he was like, yeah, I don't know. I might have to talk to my family.
Yeah.
It sounded like Roy was kind of done.
Yeah.
But Mike was had that fire back in him again. Well,
that's a little bit of a different story between the two of them. Roy's been out for, what, how long was he out for before he even got back into boxing? Like, he's only out for about a couple of years.
2 years.
Two years. The guy's been fighting for a long, long time, and he was the king of the 90s, and he basically, you know, and he's got all that money from all those fights with, and I'm pretty sure he hasn't had any issues when it came to money. Tyson, on the other hand, he's a different character because there was a point where he was the king. He dominated in the heavyweight division right from the year 87 to 19. Now, hold on. He was undisputed champion from 87 till around 90. And then I think his last fight was in 2004.
Mm.
And, you know, since then he had like a string of just bad financial issues. Like he filed for bankruptcy at one point, you know, and he got like, and then he had, he's started putting on a lot of weight and he was living out in an apartment. And then the only income he could get was through, you know, small things here and there. And then he wrote his book and then, you know, he had all those issues growing up with his legal fees and his first marriage, which ended, you know. So he's, I feel like, I know he's a lot better now financially, but I don't think he was ever as good as he was as stable back then.
I don't think.
But again, I'm not saying he's doing it for money.
I don't think he's doing it for money because it's just for charity.
Yeah, it's just for charity. But it's going to play a factor, you know what I mean, for him.
Maybe he's got other stuff though. He's got his podcast.
Yeah,
he's got his ranch. Got his
books, you know.
He's got his ranch. He's got his books.
And he's got his speaking tours and all these other things. So I'm saying he's better.
I think it that's more of a maturity thing. If you've got a 19-year-old champion,
yeah,
and you give him all this fame and money, where it was a, you know, his self-esteem was a bit of a deficit when it came to, you know, having. You know, having that kind of attention from his own family and things like that, he wasn't cared for. So when Customato comes over, brings him up, tells you the best thing that's, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. And
what he used to do to him was he would say things like that, and then he'd wake him up in the middle of the night and say, "Nah, you missed like 3 shots a day in training. I want you to go run 10 miles." Or he would. Customato was crazy.
Oh yeah,
he was crazy.
Psychologically messed with Tyson a lot, but
yeah.
That's what made him into a bit of an animal. And he already had the physical gifts of a very talented boxer anyway. So, I mean, definitely body composition wise.
Yeah.
And you can see that he's 54 years old. I thought he looked very, very good.
Yeah.
It was interesting that he said he probably lost about 100 pounds.
Yeah,
I reckon his cardio was so good and Roy's wasn't. Roy didn't look the same way that he used to. Obviously, getting into your 50s, you're certainly not gonna look the same, right? It's gonna be a lot harder to lose that body fat and that. But Roy was a lot heavier than than usual. It certainly looked it. Whereas Tyson had lost a lot of weight in the lead up to this fight, and he was a lot fitter. I found that his cardio was very good, and a lot of people were expecting him to be very fast. And as the fight progressed, it would go into Roy's favor, which is what I thought. I thought Tyson first 1 to 2 rounds, maybe 3 max, and then Roy, you know, as the fight progresses, Roy's probability of winning points to beat Tyson improves. But Mike's cardio was better than Roy's, and I don't know if Roy's cardio didn't look so good simply because of the hooks and body rips to the body that he was copping from Tyson, but it just didn't look good. And in that second third round, he's going it didn't look good from a cardiovascular standpoint.
There was also that one point when Mike hit him with a left hook. And then everybody in the pub sort of felt it. We went, ooh. But then they just kept going, really. I mean, there was a point when also Jones was popping him up with a jab. And, you know, he likes to do that up jab a lot where he hangs his arm right out in front, leans forward, and he advances forward and he just gives him that up jab. There was a couple of times where he caught Tyson with that. there was a lot more clinching, I noticed, right towards the very end. So I could tell that Jones was starting to hold on. There was even a point where I believe Jones, like, grabbed him and tried to hang on to the ropes as well, like, just to get his breath back. So, yeah, definitely from a cardio standpoint, there was a little bit of a... I did say that Mike looked a little bit more on his game. Do you think the fight would have been different, though, if they did three-minute rounds?
Yeah, yeah, I reckon it would. The 2 minutes definitely favored Tyson,
yeah,
especially eight rounds as well, instead of, you know, maybe a 10 or a 12-round fight and have 3 minutes. I mean, those 2 minutes go by very, very shortly, and they definitely had the duration of the rounds and the volume of rounds to favor Tyson's, like, short bursts of energy. I just thought Tyson was the better fighter on the night, and I don't know if it would have gone any different. It would go different, but I do not know if the winner would have been different. That's what I meant. I feel like it would have given more, a larger duration just means it was more time for Roy to work, but that's assuming if Roy's cardio is there and the volume of strikes is there, which it wasn't.
No.
You know, it was the seventh or eighth rounds when he started going. If that was the case, that, you know, three rounds should have occurred because Roy would have been able to progress and move forward and get a lot more volume of strikes in, then why wasn't Roy a lot better in the opening rounds? Tyson just overwhelmed him. Yes, the 2 minutes was 1 minute shorter than usual, and that, you know,
that essentially,
that 1 minute is a difference, and that is overall 8 minutes of ring time out the window, less time for you to work. To be honest, that kind of should have favored both men, not just Tyson. It favors Tyson a little bit more, but it favors Roy as well because there's less time for him to work. And that means, you know, he doesn't have to put in so much effort each round in order to win that round by points. You know, he can be a bit, work a little bit more off the back foot using those jabs, the signature hooks that he uses. Tyson was just quicker. Closed the distance very quickly. Mm-hmm. Jake Paul, he beat Nate Robinson. I think everyone saw that coming. Now,
let's just be honest for a second. A lot of people emphasize, a lot of people wanted to see Jake Paul get knocked out. There's a lot of people that just can't stand this kid because, you know, he's 23 years old, he's made millions, he started on the internet, and then, you know, he was on Disney and he had all these controversial moments on where he was just doing all these things to get views, if it meant, like, involving paparazzi or the police or the FBI. And then over the years, you know, recently he got into boxing a few years back and he beat KSI's little brother, Deji, and then he beat KSI's friend, Gibbon, and which was another round, first round knockout. And it just, you know, the kid's starting to, like, really... he's just got a habit of proving people wrong. And he's just one of those people that just feeds off people's hate. You know, he knows that people hate him and he feeds off it. You know, he loves to stir people up. He loves to get that attention that comes from it. I feel like when it came to the Nate Robinson fight, people just wanted to say... Everybody knew in the back of their head, you know, okay, this kid's got experience. He's younger, you know, he's been doing this for longer, he's more skilled. You're going up against a guy who's, you know, even though he was an athlete and he was a brilliant athlete, you know, I think he won the slam, Nate Robinson. He played for the Knicks and he won the slam, I think he was in the slam dunk competition and all that, and people liked him a lot because he was a short guy.
I think he was a 2-time or 3-time NBA slam dunk champion.
And the fact that Nate Robinson's actually short for an NBA player. You know, he was 5'9", 5'10". So he had a high amount of athleticism. But there's no transition. It doesn't work. You can't really transition much from basketball to boxing.
Certainly not at the age of 36.
Yeah.
And he was 36, whereas Jake Paul's, I think, 23.
Yeah, and he's been doing this for a couple of years now.
Jake Paul's got amateur boxing experience as well as wrestling experience. And I believe wrestling does carry over a little bit, especially just with grit. I mean, especially footwork and things like that. It's not the same as boxing. However, footwork is very important. Not that it's not important in boxing, but it's different. You know, you're wrestling and boxing, you're using footwork to go forwards and to the side, whereas basketball, you're going a little bit to the side, but it's mainly to, you know, get around someone or go upwards. You know, you could make an argument that athletic players in the NBA could transfer over to other sports, certainly combat sports, but not at 36.
No.
It's not possible. I thought Jake did well, although he did well against a non-pro boxer. I know they got the pro boxing license, but you can't consider it. It's a little bit of a slap in the face for other amateur boxers that are trying to get that pro card when the YouTubers are given the
You're pro right. cards. That's why everyone was mad at it. Like, you're giving something to somebody who's just because he's got, like, you know, all those views and all that, and all the little kids love him.
It's
and
for
all
money. It's for money.
Yeah, it's for money. But it's also for hype, you know? I mean, if pro boxing really, really was, what's it? If they really hated Jake Paul and all that and they didn't really want anything to do with him, why would you put him on the card like that? That doesn't make sense. You know, just give him another card and just not promote it as much. Because the fact that they used him, they not really used him, but they took advantage of his stardom and his fame as a way to sell a card. Now that they got to give. So you really right now, after coming out of this round, this is his third ever fight, people really should start giving credit where credit is due to Jake Paul. Because he came out there and I was watching the fight and I thought the kid's maturing. He had a good jab. He was throwing right. He knocked him down twice for the same punch, which is an overhand right. He was pretty confident in his footwork. He kept his hands up. One of the other things is he just stopped his hands, but he was trying to make more calculated punches. One thing that there's two things I noticed, and personally for myself, what I see in the gym and also sometimes when I perform, is you can tell someone's not experienced when it comes to fighting when they start swinging wildly, and the second one is what they do when a punch is coming at them. You can tell someone's experience when they eat a shot, they just keep dead eye contact with their opponent, throws a shot, hits a hand, nothing moves. You can tell someone's an experience because if someone lands a punch, they either try and look away or they flinch. So that was the other thing. Jake Paul wasn't flinching. He wasn't looking away. He wasn't wailing or trying to throw any wild punches. He was just trying to throw combinations. And actually, there was one point when it was in the first round when I thought, fuck, this kid's got it. He's not, like, in terms of professional boxing, he's nowhere near that level. But the kid's got some skills now under his
belt. He's got amateur boxing skills. Not professional boxing skills.
But the thing is, I wouldn't really count on him if I was to. I wouldn't put my money on him if we brought him over to Australia and we put him into Perth Dragon Force boxing. Everyone would be like, get the fuck out of here, kid. No. He'll get sliced up by the first killer that comes his way, really. Mm. Yeah.
I feel like after those three fights now that he's going to gain a bit of momentum. And I think if they're going to continue to do this and he's going, it sounds like he wants to, they're probably going to set up someone that he's got beef with. I don't think many people want to see him fight a pro boxer because we all know how that's going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Nate Robinson, I think a lot of people were betting a lot of money on him. Their hopes. Not so much money. They didn't want to put their money on him. They wanted to put their hopes on him because they wanted Nate Robinson to beat Jake Paul pretty decisively. You know, a lot of comments on Nate Robinson's boxing channel, which he built quite a bit up onto the lead up to this fight now. I think it's like 40, 50K or something like that. Mm-hmm. But Nate Robinson got a lot of comments saying, you know, you'll be an absolute god if you knock out Jake Paul. We all want this. And that's because, like, it's the same way with a lot of fighters that talk a big game and maybe have a little bit of negative, not a negative personality, but a lot of people don't really give to those people like Jake Paul because, you know, he is quite outspoken. He's probably not the nicest guy. And he talks a load of shit. And a lot of people don't really like that, especially when it comes to the purity of boxing and that. And then when a YouTuber crosses over to pro boxing, they even hate you even more. So Jake Paul did very well today. Do I think he should go against a pro boxer? No. Should I go? I think he should go against a KSI, another YouTuber, or something like that. He called out Conor McGregor or Dylan Danis, as well as Ben Askren. I think the person that he's got the most of a chance is Ben Askren, because Ben Askren's stand-up skills are awful.
Yeah, like, well,
terrible stand-up skills.
Ben Askren even tweeted out saying, why does everyone hate him so much? He's like, who are these kids?
They are assholes. Like, yeah. I don't mind Logan Paul that much, but Jake Paul is an asshole, and I think a lot of people don't like him. Just listen to him. They're like, just shut up. They don't like him, and Jake Paul knows that, and he's used that to make money.
Yes,
that's what he's done, and he's going to continue to do that because, like you said, he feeds off the hate, and he turns that into a monetary machine, and that's what he's going to do in the next fight after this. I don't think this is going to be Jake Paul's last fight. I think he's going to go and do it again. I don't know who against, maybe KSI or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think KSI wants to fight again, though.
That's
the thing. I don't think KSI wants to fight again after the fight between him and Logan, where he won by points, you know. Like, Logan said, hey, man, do you want to do a trilogy? Like, KSI was like, nah, man, I'm done with this. I don't want to do that again. Because there's a sense of, there's something I want to talk about boxes for a while that always in my, there's one thing I always in my about. Boxers and fighters in general, is how they respond to violence, how they respond to getting hit, how they respond to being put in really difficult conversations, difficult situations where someone's on top of you and pounding you. I know this personally because when I do BJJ, like, being put into that position where some guy's got his arm around your neck and he's choking you out, or he's trying to leg lock you, or your joint, your arm's being stiffed into a really uncomfortable position. In those moments, it really tests you to see how much you want it. And especially when you're on a large, a world stage where all these people are watching you, you know, how can you respond to that pressure? How can you respond to getting punched with an 8-ounce glove can you respond to getting hit with an 8-ounce glove to the face? You know, and a lot of people can't take that. A lot of people can't take that. That's just the one thing we got to respect the most about fighters, just their ability to, they have like a desire for it. Mm. You remember when we had that conversation with Antonio Caruso? He had it. He's like, I want to get hit. I want to see blood. I want to, you know, I want to break an arm. I want to see someone get knocked the fuck out.
Mm.
That's that mentality.
I don't even think it's mentality. I think if you've been doing martial arts for that long, that's something that you're okay with. I know myself, you know, if you watch something, I mean, you could say you're a bit fucked up, but like, you know, you watch a lot of times in mixed martial arts or Brazilian jiu-jitsu, you know, things do happen, big cuts and horrific elbows, people caught in an arm bind, and their you know, arm breaks. Maybe Robert Whittaker, he kicks Uriah Hall, catches the kick, breaks his ulna in the first round. These are things that we don't even shy away because we just see them. We're like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of these people, these fighters are very much used to it because they see it day in, day out, and they understand that's just like part of it.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that Jake Paul had his, you know, his vision was fully on Nate Robinson, didn't take his eyes off, continued to press forwards and create pressure. But Nate Robinson was very gun shy. I noticed that he just really lacked experience because it was not very quick boxing as well. Even in the first round, it wasn't very fast jabs. A lot of the time he had his chin up in the air constantly while he was moving forward. And I mean, the chin up in the air is probably the worst one because that's the easiest target in the world.
There's one thing I pointed out right off the bat where I'm like, he's not had enough time or had enough preparation experience, was when Nate, right off the first round, he did this. It's an absolute rookie mistake in boxing to have both hands stretched out in front trying to throw a punch or cross your hands when you fight, because people all get too excited. They want to get one punch. Oh, I miss this. Got to throw the right, well, the next one, before the hand's even back to your chin, you know, it's like the first lesson you do. One hand's out in front, the other hand's protecting you. And Nate, he had both hands out in front. It was a game of experience. And when I saw that, I'm like, Nate, Jake's just going to put him away. And he did. And he gave him a massive knockout with the overhand right, and he hit the canvas, like, poof, and he was out.
He woke up several minutes afterwards and escorted him out. Yeah. But, like, a lot of people are like, what the fuck is it? When's he going to wake up? Because he was flat on his face. You know, it was reminiscent of when Korean Zombie got knocked out by...
Rodriguez?
Rodriguez. Yeah, by that upwards elbow. And he just slumped down, knocked out on his face down. I mean, it was a shitty sight to see, but just because, you know, Nate Robinson isn't a bad guy. He was probably the more positive bloke out of the two. I mean, we did say we were expecting Jake Paul to win, you know. And that's not to say because we like Jake. I don't really like Jake, but he had the amateur experience. He had combat sport experience in terms of wrestling and I believe amateur boxing. I think he's got an amateur boxing background. He's already had two fights prior. Robinson hasn't. He's very young. He can learn skills very quickly. And he's young, so he can recover a lot quick and get back in the gym. Nate Robinson, he's 36 outside of his athletic prime. In terms of combat sports, it's usually around 32. Very difficult for you to learn new things, especially striking and movement wise. So not very difficult, but you know, it's your mind is a bit stubborn when it comes to learning new tasks and new skills like that. New sports, even though they may interest you, you might not take to them as well as you think. Yeah, it was a good day watching that. We know that Anthony Smith, he beat his opposition today as well, via first round submission, correct?
Great.
It was interesting that Curtis Blaydes and the Derek Lewis fight got cancelled just right before the fight because Blaydes was, you know, tested positive for COVID, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, I was a little bit of a shame because Curtis Blaydes is on a bit of a winning streak, you know, lately. He's been doing a good job. You know, his last fight was a little bit, wasn't really anything special against Volkov, but he's still on a winning streak. Derek Lewis, that man is a national treasure.
He's so funny, and he's got
tweet.
No, I haven't. He's got dynamite in his hands though, and he's so crazy to watch. Like, it's never out until the very last second of the very last round because, like, whenever he's got dynamite in his hands, honestly, whenever that cracks,
he's got crazy. He's got a wicked sense of humor. You know what he did was he tweeted about Conor McGregor. He said something like, "Oh, that Conor McGregor, he keeps calling me out, man.
He didn't tweet it. He got asked that in an interview. And the interview was, the interviewer was saying, "Oh, is anyone that, you know, is calling you out or you're interested in fighting?" He says, "That fucking Conor McGregor, he's always calling me out. So, you know, I want Conor next."
He's like, the king of interviews.
He's very funny. He's king of Instagram as well. He's got a lot of really funny memes as well. I'm upset that we didn't get to see Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes.
Oh, I think people would have rather just skipped the fight, tuned in for the interview.
Yeah. I think that fight is getting pushed back to later in December.
Yeah. You know what they should do?
What?
They should, maybe that's too early, but stick it on the December 13th card.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they were maybe going to do a December 13th or December 19th.
Yeah.
Cause December 19th is one of the greatest fight night cards I've ever seen.
Is that the one that is that the Brandon versus Figueres? Is it Ferguson versus Oliveira? No, what is it?
I'll bring it up now. It's the what is it? The Leon Edwards versus Khamzat Chimaev.
Khamzat Chimaev, yeah.
Yeah, I'll bring it up. It's insane. Insane. Even the prelims are stacked as well.
Oh, and we know we love a good stacked prelims.
Well, that usually is what shows in a good card, in that it's not just the main event that's stacked, it's the prelims as well.
Yeah, I think that's just what's happening to... I think that's one thing we've got to be grateful for the UFC in general, just the amount of star power that's coming and the prospects that's coming. We've got it's getting to a point now where the UFC is becoming so popular, there's so much talent that even the prelims themselves are becoming stacked. Like, how often do we watch boxing and we were excited to watch the prelims? Very, very rarely. Very rarely, unless we know the people. But UFC, how often do we watch the prelims? We're starting to watch it a lot more now than we usually do.
It's just because sometimes, you know, it is such a long main card that sometimes we're not able to get up as early to watch the prelims. I'll just run through. I mean, it's December 19th for Americans, but for us, it's the 20th. Leon Edwards versus Khamzat Chimaev.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Thompson versus Jeff Neal.
Ooh.
Meisen Tabura versus Greg Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
Marlon Moraes versus Rob Font.
Oh.
Misha Kirkunov versus Ryan Spann. Ryan Spann's the bloke with the Superman tattoo. Do you remember that one? The big S tattoo?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Jose Aldo versus Marlon Vera.
Yeesh, I'm looking forward to that
one. Don't know why that's opening the main card, but fuck it.
Yeah, well, it's because Marlon Vera... Jose Aldo is coming off a loss. No one really who knew who Marlon Vera was until after he stole Sean O'Malley's hype.
They did know about him. He was just a bit underrated.
I'm just saying casual fans.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Casual. Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying we're casuals, but a lot of casuals didn't know who he was until we took his hype, really.
Michelle Piera versus Chaos Williams. That's a mad fight.
Yeah,
Chaos Williams from the Dana White Contender Series has incredible power. And then
he's got mad hands.
Fighting Michelle Piera, who's... what was his last fight? I think his last fight was against... So Diego Sanchez? I think there was one in between.
Yeah.
But he's got very incredible capoeira and spinning kicks and things like that. And you've also got Bilal Muhammad versus Diego Lima. Welterweight fight right under it. So that's crazy to see. It was interesting that Vettori has now came in against Jack Hermanson instead of... who just got pulled out for that? Oh, Kevin Holland.
Yeah.
But then Kevin Holland gets put in for a different fight. Kevin Holland's been moved to a different fight for that one as well. I believe the fight next week is Marvin Vettori versus Jack Hermanson.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, we've got 13th of December, Davidson Figueroa, Brandon Moreno, and Tony Ferguson versus Charles Oliveira, which we talked about in the last podcast, which we are super excited for, because that main card itself is good, because we've got Junior Dos Santos fighting on it, and then we also got, they don't have the prelims for that one decided yet, but probably they might stack it up. But we've got 2 weeks literally in a row of kick-ass cards, and so Sunday, 20th of December, man, that's going to be a nice little early Christmas present for us, really. Sure, we're going to rock up there, you know. And we're going to have a little... I'm going to chuck on my Christmas hat and all that. And we're going to be like a little boy. You know, back when I first got my first PS2 on Christmas, you know. But now I'm an adult. And, you know, my Christmas gift is watching Khamzat Chimaev and Leon Edwards duke it out.
So that'd be a really good fight. Do what was... I want to bring out that really funny fight we watched earlier.
I'm also going to get one of those... beards.
Oh, yeah,
So I can just put hands up.
Yeah, you can't grow a beard. And neither can I.
I can't grow a beard. But what I might do is just go down to the costume store and just get one of those. It's just like a nice beard. And I might do like 10 sessions of jiu-jitsu before the fight. So I get my cauliflower ears.
They're gonna think you're so fucking racist if you wear that beard. If you just walk into it with a fucking, they're gonna think you're so fucking racist.
This is a white guy with brown hair and a black beard and cauliflower ears. Like, what the fuck?
They're gonna think you're so fucking racist. Like, you think you come from the Middle East? No. What was really funny was that I don't know how heavy the female fighter was, but she fought a 240... She was 60 kilos, I think. 60... It's like 60 kilos.
I think she was 135 pounds.
Yeah, that's 60 kilos.
Yeah.
60 kilos versus 240 kilo. Very fat man.
Only in Russia.
Yeah, well, only in Russia you're going to see a fight like that. I mean, newsflash, the female fighter won in the first round. It was fucking hilarious to watch them fight. yeah, that's fucking so. I don't know who either of the individuals are. One of them's a YouTuber. I know one of them's the fat man's a YouTuber.
Is he?
I believe so. And I think, I mean, dude, it's a good wake up call. If you lose 100 kilos of weight and then rematch her, go for it.
Yeah.
that would be funny.
Lose 100 kilos or maybe lose 150 kilos, dude. You will be very, very quick.
Oh, my God.
Imagine walking around with, well, you're, how much do you weigh, 80?
I'm 79 now.
79. So let's round that up to 80. So you would have to pack on another 160 kilos on top of you. Now, imagine if you have to walk around like that 24 hours every day, every day, every day.
I'm one of those guys who even struggles to gain weight.
You'd be huge as fuck.
Yeah, mate, I'll be fucking, mate. This chair, I wouldn't even fit in this chair.
That bloke would crush that chair.
Yeah, but what it'd be like is, you know, I'd be so big if I try to sit into this chair, all the fat would just like puff into the seat, and some bits would just like be hanging over the sides.
It'd
be that big.
It's bad that because it was a Russian like MMA event. They've set it up. I believe the guy was a YouTuber. I'm not certain on that. 240 kilo man versus 60 kilo female fighter. She looked like she had prior experience in martial arts.
Oh, she did.
She showed that, you know, she had a decent jab, decent Superman punch at one point. I think she caught him with a right hook or something like that. Caught him close to the ear. He just went down. It looked like he shied away from the punishment. It didn't look like he knocked him out, but he was kind of like, I want out.
Yeah.
He probably should have, like, verbally or physically tapped from strikes because he just gave up.
What were
they trying to prove?
They were trying to prove, like, they take one of the most unathletic men and put it against a very athletic woman.
So she's a female MMA professional.
Okay.
And he's
a YouTuber.
I love how they say he's nearly up to 200 kilos. He's not. He's 240 kilos. I don't get why. So just why the main event pitted the 62 kilo pro Darina Mazdiuk against a 240 kilo YouTuber, Grigory Chisyakov, remains unexplained. So they have no idea. He's got 120,000 subscribers on his channel.
What were they trying to prove, man?
I don't know. Well, at the end of the day, it was a 90-second knockout. He definitely should not have even gone in there. He should have lost at least 100 kilos.
Yeah. What was...
He was so fat.
Did he even do any training?
Didn't look like he just... The only time it looked like there could be an issue for her is when he kind of just leaned up against her on the cage.
Why didn't he just slam her? I don't get why he just grabbed her and that he didn't even have to like pick her up. He would just grab her, just absorb her. Like it was like the, you know, he's like,
he was
the block.
Fat. It was just fat. You know, usually with a...
Drop to the ground and then that's it. She's gone. They'll be like, where did she go?
suffocated as a chokehold by fat.
And then literally just like he turns around and her body is like inside his and he's like absorbed her like
God,
the blob.
That's
and
disgusting.
Then they have to like pull her out or something like
it
that.
It was literally a 62 kilo female fighter fighting the Michelin man times two. Like he was fucking huge. I don't know how you get that huge, to be honest. 240 kilos, you've got to like, it can't be like, oh, I just, you know, ate a bit and I didn't really work out. And I don't know how I went. 240 kilos, you worked for that.
Yeah.
You fucking worked.
You like must have been like, eating about 10 McDonald's cheeseburgers a day at least.
No, way more than that. Way more than that.
You don't consume water. The only thing you consume, the only liquid you consume is a sugary drink.
A lot of them do. They don't have water. They drink orange juice or Gatorade or they drink soft drink or Coke. Some of them drink like 5 liters of Coke a day. It's insane.
It's disgusting. He must have been very immobile to get like that way. But
I'm surprised he could walk around. Now that's impressive. To walk into that cage, up those stairs.
Yeah.
Impressive. Yeah. I was impressed by that alone. Nothing else in the ring. In the octagon. I wasn't impressed by that.
I was surprised he didn't need to get one of those electric chairs going up the stairs.
Oh.
Or he could actually walk to the rim and not be completely gassed out.
Well, that's what I was about to say. I said, like, I'm surprised he didn't have an oxygen tank for the walkout music.
Can you imagine just going to the girl and say, hey, what was her name?
Darina?
Darina. I'm going to follow her on Instagram. But You imagine just going to her and saying, hey, we got a fight for you. Okay, you're going to be fighting a dude. She'll be like, okay.
Darina Mazyuk.
Okay, Darina, if you're watching this, I'm going to follow you on Instagram. Because imagine just going to her, that woman, and just saying, okay, Darina, we're going to get you to fight a man. She'll be like, okay. He happens to weigh 240 kilograms. Okay. Imagine if I walked up to some random girl on the street, I'm going to get you to fight a man. She'll be like, fuck off. No way.
I thought there was like legislation in place that a male fighter fights a male fighter. A female cannot fight a male in any degree. But I guess in Russia, they don't give a shit.
They don't give a shit. Well, Russia's a new kind of shit. That Russia is a different animal, man.
Yeah.
Like, the people in Russia, I've got a lot of respect for Russians because they are very outspoken people.
Mm.
If something is shit, they'll tell you it's shit. If they're not happy with something, they'll say it sucks. If the weather sucks, they'll say it sucks. You know, I think, a lot of people will like that in Russia, you know what I mean? Because not even that, but they have a lack of sunlight. And someone told me they only get like up to 4 hours max of sunlight a day. A lot of it's just really dark and gloomy place, obviously, because it's cold. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people in Russia are just very outspoken.
Something that you brought up earlier was that when we were at the pub was you were running through how much you loved that last episode of The Mandalorian.
I thought
that was really, really cool that they had a live Asana Tano. I mixed up the one of the fighters' names that I mixed her name and a fighter that was on today. Not Baby Yoda anymore. It's now called Grogu. I thought it was interesting that it didn't start with a Y because there's been two of Yoda's species before. There's been Yoda and there's been Yaddle.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yaddle was in the Phantom Menace. But they didn't have her in the Attack of the Clones of the Revenge of the Sith.
Why?
Because apparently they didn't have her because George Lucas wasn't impressed by the sock puppets that they had or whatever puppet that they... It's not a sock puppet. they don't have a sock puppet, but they had a puppet, right? And then later on they did CGI later on and George Lucas was happy with the CGI. However, they only had... It was essentially to cut back on the budget, to not spend all that CGI money on two people from Yoda's species when Yaddle wasn't exactly important to the storyline. But it is noted that Yaddle managed to get away and survive Order 66, like Yoda after the Revenge of the Sith. And a lot of Jedi did. But it's interesting that Grogu has a name with starting with a G and not a Y.
Yeah.
Like the other... people in this, we don't even know what the species is called.
We don't know what the species is. I feel like that's going to be a good thing to lead on to the Mandalorian. And let's just say one thing. One thing I respect about you a lot is that you can always have, most 90% of the time, you always have a good opinion when it comes to movies and TV shows. Like you always tell me.
90% I have a good opinion. 100% of the time I've got a good opinion.
Well, I didn't agree with you on when it came to It too, so that brought the statistics down a little bit.
I thought It too was shit.
I thought it was good. Okay. So that's where we're in disagreement, okay. But this is purely subjective. But you sent me a message on Friday night saying, hey, man, I just watched the new Mandalorian episode, very impressed. Okay, all right. So I went straight home, cooked dinner, had it, and I sent you a message saying, yes, it was very crispy. I was really impressed by the actor who played, I always forget her name.
Rosario Dawson,
Dawson. She's in a lot of things. I just keep forgetting her name. She did a really good job as Ahsoka Tano. They had that look really nailed down.
I thought the hair could have been a bit longer because she's older.
I thought as well.
I thought it was too short. But the thing is, if it's too long, does it get in the way while you're like...
I don't know, maybe she ties it up.
I thought it was very cool that they had the Beskar spear. Did you know that the actress that played the... I don't remember her name. The girl that wielded the Beskar skill, the spear. She was the goddaughter to Bruce Lee.
I forgot about that.
Not the daughter, Shannon Lee. I'm talking about the goddaughter.
Wow.
The goddaughter to Bruce Lee was the actress. And I can't remember her name, but she was the actress that played the woman. It wasn't fully explained who she was, but it was more so that she works for Grand Admiral Thrawn, that they've brought over from the animated Star Wars Rebels series.
See, that's what I got to respect a lot about The Mandalorian. They're bringing all the stuff over from the animated series.
A lot of it's Dave Filoni who created Ahsoka, and he's taking bits and pieces. He's being very smart with what he can choose and what he can't choose.
Yeah. He's been very calculated with the way that they're pacing it as well. They're just planting seeds, dropping subtle hints. You know what I mean? They're not like going too hard, too fast. It's a right pace.
Yeah, I also want to mention that the day that episode came out was also the day of Bruce Lee's 80th birthday.
Really?
And Bruce Lee's granddaughter played the villain in that particular episode. So I thought that was...
It wasn't his goddaughter, it was his granddaughter.
His goddaughter played the particular villain for that episode, but it was also Bruce Lee's... It would have been his 80th birthday.
Oof, man. Imagine if he was still alive today to see that.
Diana Lee, I believe. Diana Lee is the daughter of Dan Inosanto. Okay. You remember Dan Inosanto from The Art of the Expressing the Human Body?
Yeah.
Because he was co-writing that book.
Yes.
To produce that for like Bruce Lee fans and things like that. That's a really good book. I've got it. Legacy. Oh no, it's in my car. I've got that book in my car.
Legacy lives on. That's all I can say. I mean, she's doing her godfather proud. One thing I wanted to talk about was Thrawn, right? Well, two things. First thing is Thrawn. Who do you reckon would be a good actor to play as Thrawn?
The voice actor. They've already showed the voice actor what he looks like. He's got previous experience, normal, regular acting.
Oh, okay.
All you would have to do is just paint him in blue and he could be... I believe that's what they're going to do.
Okay, because I had a different theory. You know, I thought would be a really... I was thinking about this on the car on the way here because I was looking at the pictures of what Thrawn looks like because I didn't know anything about him because he came from Star Wars Rebels.
Yes.
I didn't watch that one, but I thought to myself, I think we should get Benedict Cumberbatch to play as him.
What's interesting is Benedict Cumberbatch is with a scene with the guy that plays Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Really?
Yeah, and they showed in that scene at the table, and then they show who plays Grand Admiral Thrawn, and they say that actually this guy should. So I get what you mean, but when you see this guy who's in that scene with Benedict Cumberbatch and they're right next to each other, the guy that's...
Oh, so they've already started filming...
No. There's a film that Benedict Cumberbatch has previously done with a voice actor that plays Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Oh, I see.
And when you see the guy, you'll know he's the right fit for the
character. Okay, fair enough.
Also, he has the voice already. It's the same way I would have liked if Mark Hamill played the Joker because he's already got the most...
Yeah.
With the greatest Joker voice ever.
The power of the voice, basically.
And I think the voice is what captures the... experience of the actor anyway. You know what I mean?
So the other thing, sorry to cut you off there, the other thing I wanted to ask you was that we talked about in the pub, who do you think now the episodes like Ahsoka's like, I can't help you, you need to go to an old Jedi temple, we need to call get to him, put it to a point, he needs to call out to the Force and then a Jedi will find him. Who do you think that Jedi is going to be?
To be honest, I'm not too sure. I know you said possibly a Mace Windu could come back or something like that. I tried to do a bit of experience in it, research into it, and I couldn't find any real threads on if it was true that Mace Windu could come back.
What if it was Yoda?
As a Force ghost?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Because then he can give a little bit more insight, because it's Yoda's species, and you could give a little bit more insight into Grogu. Like, what he is, who they are, how do they be, you know?
Maybe Yoda or maybe a Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah, or maybe a Ben Kenobi or a...
But the thing is, Obi-Wan would have to be played by Ewan McGregor and then just make him look old, whereas Ewan McGregor is already going to do his own spin-off series as Obi-Wan Kenobi, so...
We want that to happen.
I want that. I was more excited about Obi-Wan Kenobi than I was Mandalorian, but I'm so happy that Mandalorian occurred. I'm very, very happy with what they're taking with different, you know, different parts of the Star Wars universe and kind of putting them all together. What I think they might bring is maybe an Ezra Bridger from the Star Wars Rebels, because he apparently was on the same ship with Grand Admiral Thrawn. They get thrown... I believe It gets a bit weird with how Star Wars Rebels works.
Yeah.
Because it, after they survive, it's after the original trilogy. It's very strange. I need to do more research into it, but I believe it's maybe a bit of time travel that they used, and it threw them into the later on in the original trilogy after Luke had defeated the Emperor, yeah, etc. And then Thrawn has apparently survived.
Yeah.
And there's obviously the remnants of him going about, and that's why Ahsoka is trying to go find Grand Admiral Thrawn and make sure, you know, that he's no longer a threat. But Ezra Bridger, if Thrawn is survived, then so is Ezra Bridger. And I think Ezra Bridger might be the one that comes to Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Not Baby Yoda. I need to stop saying that now. I need to say Grogu.
Yeah, well, Star Wars canon is so confusing.
Very.
Very confusing. It's very, very complex.
It's just weird because they have a complete Star Wars universe in the comics where, you know, Luke Skywalker meets other people. You know, he's considered the greatest Jedi ever. He has so many cool abilities. And then they say, well, actually, that's not canon. Some things aren't canon, whereas some of the written books are canon and things like that. You know, it's weird that they can pick and choose what's canon and not. It's very confusing.
Who can pick and choose?
Disney can. Oh. Disney can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yeah, it's like a boardroom, the Star Wars executives. Like a division of Disney's just devoted to Star Wars, and they just pick and choose what's canon and they vote on it.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
I think it was interesting that now he has to go to a a sacred Jedi place, yeah, in order
one place to the next
on Tython.
Yeah.
It was also interesting that Yoda was at the same time and Anakin was in the same time. So Anakin and what's his name, Grogu, were born in the same time. They're the same age, right? And it's interesting that Grogu has been trained by many Jedi masters, but then he escaped. Now, one interesting theory was that, and the question of that pertains to this theory is that who saved Grogu
exactly
from the temple during that time? Now, I thought maybe like an Obi-Wan or something like that, and then you could feed in Ewan McGregor as a younger Obi-Wan, works perfectly fine. Some people have put into question maybe Yaddle or the librarian of the Jedi library, yes, because she has already been, you know, it's already canon that she actually escaped.
Yeah.
And she built up, took some stuff from the Jedi library and, you know, stored some of this information in the holocrons and things like that so that they could restart the, you know, the Jedi Order and things like that. So that's an interesting theory on who could have, you know, saved Grogu.
Mm.
Otherwise, it could have not been saved. It could have been that Grogu was taken, stolen, and went straight to the Empire.
You know what I'm going to say real quick? Saying this. The Mandalorian is now going to be the new Game of Thrones. Okay, you got a series that's so hyped up, so well known. You got characters that people love. Mm. All I can say is to Disney, I'm saying this on your camera right now, do not fuck this up.
I really hope not.
Mandalorian is your lifeline.
I hope they throw more money at it because it really is their last lifeline with Disney Plus, because Disney Plus has fuck all on it because for the general public.
Yes.
You know, it's only really good for maybe very hardcore Marvel fans that enjoy watching back the movies they've already seen, or it's for little kids watching Disney movies.
Don't fuck this up, Disney.
Don't fuck this up.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to my TED Talk. Do you want to wrap it up there?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap it up there. Good episode, man. Tune in next week. This is just a whole bunch of other stuff on the way. Oh, dude, by the way, we did it. I think 30 podcasts now.
Is it?
30? No. 29? I know, we got
29, 20. It's so confusing. Oh,
man, we've done. Look, we've been doing this for a few months now. We're getting good at it. We're getting better at it. I mean, we're going to keep, we obviously going to keep going, keep this pace up. But, you know, I can say is I'm very proud of this, guys. If you're not subscribed, please subscribe. I think like 99% of our audience who watches our videos are subscribed. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, but we barely ever use it, do we?
Don't tell them that. yeah, YouTube channel, Instagram, Facebook. Those tend to be the three ones we use the most. We engage with the fans as much as we can. Mm. Just make sure you reach out to us. If you want any particular content or you want any questions or anything like that, I mean, it doesn't even have to pertain to MMA. It can be anything. It can be anything for our non-MMA fans as well. So thank you very much for the support. If we already know you or we don't know you, thank you very much for the support. Yeah. We really do try very hard. Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. All the best. Peace.
Bye-bye.